Listen to Melanated Mom's podcast.
Because she has something to say.
Oh, yeah. I'm a melanated mom, working hard as can be. I show up for my children while showing up for me. I'm a melanated mom.
Hey, mamas. How are you? Welcome back. So nice to have you back for another episode of the Melanated Mom Podcast, where we raise creative, innovative, and independent thinkers, but in the process, we still remember to honor ourselves as true people and as whole people. So, I am finally off of the transparent mommy moments, even though this time I actually listened to the podcast before I made the intros to the podcast. Even though after I listened to it, I was like, this kind of could have been classified as a transparent mommy moment, but there's so much more, like it's so much deeper than that. So if you are married, if you have been married and divorced, if you have ever dealt with anything in the mental health issues, if you have ever questioned yourself about if you were good enough or like how to be successfully single, you are going to love this episode. This episode is with Dr. Masadi Porter. Dr. Sadi, as she calls herself, is amazing. We had a really candid conversation about how to walk through singleness, how life looks after being divorced, how life looks as being a single parent of children, and how you navigate life and all that good stuff. So she was just a real sweetheart. I enjoyed talking to her so much. She caught me at a time where I was like going through something in my life, and we got on the call. And when I usually get on the call with people, I usually talk to them for about 10 or 15 minutes before we even start the interview. And after we got off, she stayed on the phone with me for an additional 15 minutes, and she just prayed over me and my family. So she was just a blessing. I really enjoyed talking with her. So stay tuned for this episode because you are going to love what she has to say. And so I am here with another podcast review, and this comes from the podcast Confessions from a Red Couch, and this is my girl Janae. Janae is an awesome podcaster. When you have time, go over and listen to Confessions from a Red Couch. And Janae says, love it. I love this podcast. I especially like how she talks about 2020 will be the same as 2019 if you don't change something and do something different. 2020, y'all. Back then, who knew 2020 would look like this? But we still have some time to do some amazing things, since not as many things are going on and are open or being able to like move about the world as we normally do. I see a lot of people coming up with a lot of creative ideas. So I think 2020 has been truly devastating for some and amazing for others, and even could be like some devastation and some amazement. So, 2020 has worked out to our benefit in many ways. So, like I said, go over and listen to Janae on Confessions from a Red Couch. Her podcast is really great. And I think that that's all that I have to say at the top of the podcast. Of course, the regular rate, review, and subscribe, and share this podcast with a friend that you think it may help. And now I want to jump into the episode with Dr. Masadi Porter.
Hi.
Hey, guys. One more thing before we start the podcast. I have two new podcast editors, and I would like to introduce you to them. Tell the people your name and how old you are.
Hi, my name is Emma. I am 6.
And here's my other podcast editor, and tell the people how old you are and your name.
My name is Xavier. I'm 8 years old.
All right. So these will be the people that will edit the podcast from now on. They are official Melanated Mom workers, employees. Thank you.
Bye.
Peace, Melanated Moms.
Hey, mamas. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Melanated Mom Podcast, where we raise creative, innovative, and independent thinkers. But while we're doing that, we make sure not to forget about ourselves.
I'm coming to you guys today with another very special guest. I would like to welcome Masadi Porter to the podcast, and I'm going to give her a bit of time to introduce herself. Hey, Masadi, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to be on today. As busy moms, I know we were kind of, you know, trying to get it together, and I'm just so excited that we were able to do that. A little bit about me from the mom perspective. So I became a single mom when my children were 3 and 5, so about 15 years ago. And so definitely have walked the journey of figuring out what does that look like, you know, as a woman, as a mother, as a you know, person who works full time, but also has dreams and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so that's been a huge part of my life for the past, you know, for the past 15 years. My children are now 20 and 18 tomorrow. My youngest will be 18 tomorrow. And so awesome young men, and we can talk a little bit more about them later if you want. But yeah, just trying to live this single mom life and raise productive citizens. And, you know, I think God has blessed me and I've done a pretty good job.
That is so amazing. I'm so always so happy to hear that. The transition from raising them to littles and to watching them grow into young men and young women is always so amazing to me. Like how the relationship shifts and how things happen and how you get to see everything that you poured in. So I'm sure you are very proud.
Yes, very much.
So Masadi, who also goes as Dr. Sadi, has written a book as well. And so, like I told her before we got on the podcast, I've been doing my research on her. This girl done been on all the podcasts. I had to listen up and see, you know, see some of my angles that I needed to take from my podcast. But I listened to you last night. The Fade Up podcast is what I listened to you on. Oh, my goodness. That was an amazing, amazing interview. Just because of the different angles that you guys took and then you went into mental health. I mean, it was, and to hear the guy's perspective on it too, I'm like, that interview was awesome.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, they did a good job with that. And so tell us a little bit more about your book.
Okay, so the book that just came out in February is called Alone, Not Lonely, Embracing the Power of Being Successfully Single. And the premise behind this book is, how do we get ourselves together? How do we become whole before we decide to get into relationships? And it can be, you know, of course, we're focusing mostly on romantic relationships, but we need to be whole in all of our relationships. So whether that's friends, family, you know, whatever. And so what I did was I considered the important parts of us. So what's the condition of your heart, you know, your identity, you know, your trust level, your faith level, your mental, all of those things are important. You know, we can't just keep jumping into stuff and then bumping our heads and then trying to figure out, you know, well, why is it not working? Or why do I feel this way about this? And, you know, taking that time to just take a step back. And it's okay to be single. You know, single is not a death sentence. Yes. And get yourself together so that we can stop bringing our trash into other people's lives. And so while the book is focused on singles, I've had several married people that have, you know, read it. And one said she wished that she had had it before she got married. And then another person who had been married and, you know, has since divorced, said that the book was good for her because it's preparing her before she goes into her next relationship. So that's the overall about the book.
And so there's so many pieces to look at about yourself, like before marriage, somebody who has been married for a long time, somebody who has been married and divorced. And I often say I have a few friends that have been married and divorced, and I always think that they have almost the best perspective on relationships. because you have been in something and you know what you don't want. Like, yep. you probably have been through a gamut of things with this person and has seen the good and the bad, and you learn so much about yourself. Marriage is like the training ground for learning everything about yourself. Yes. Yes. You learn how funky and foul you are. You learn how good you may be. You learn all these things about yourself that you can't hide from this other person. So I look at my divorced friends and I say, wow, you have a really different perspective on it, because you have been in a situation where you've gotten to see and learn yourself in that, and know what you want to do as far as you're concerned and changing and growing, and know what you don't want anymore. So how do you feel? Do you feel you learned that lesson in marriage?
Absolutely. In marriage, and I actually was engaged. I've been engaged once since the divorce, but I absolutely do believe that divorced people have a special perspective, because qualify that. I believe that divorced people who really take a good look at what happened in the relationship have a good perspective. And I wanted to make that clarification, because sometimes people get divorced and they only look at what the other person did. And I'm not saying it wasn't, the other person's quote unquote fault, but all of us have a role to play in situations. And so I think that divorced people are able to say, okay, here's where the demise of my marriage happened. What was going on with that person? What was going on with me? If they take that opportunity to really assess that situation, you will learn so much about yourself. Even if you're learning, that's how I don't want to treat someone. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is that you're getting out of it, definitely divorced people have that unique perspective of all of that. And I also think that emotionally, mm-hmm. again, if we process it correctly, emotionally, I think we get to be in a different place, because we have come out of a situation where we have committed ourselves before God, before man, mm-hmm. and then it didn't work.
Right.
And I know other people said it too, but I often feel like a divorce is like death. It's something that you mourn, it's something that you have to allow yourself to grieve it. I remember walking out of the courthouse on the day that I got divorced, and I called my best friend at the time, and I was literally crying and laughing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is wrong? What is wrong with me? I had never felt anything like that in my life. And both were genuine emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I can only imagine. I mean, I have three children, and my son's father, that's 24, we were never married, but any separation like that, like any splitting, just thinking about like what your life is going to look like now, what your life is going to look like raising kids now, all of that stuff, what your relationship with this person is going to look like, because now you have a co-parenting situation. It's a lot to think about, and the process of it is not fun. Even though you may not want to be with this person anymore, it's still very heart-wrenching to think of the fact that you are losing a piece of yourself, because that's what I'm going to imagine it feels like.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I was like telling her before she got on, and telling you guys again about the Fade Up podcast that she was on, and you guys spoke even to the mental health that's involved in like getting in and out of these relationships. So you told a story on the Fade Up podcast about your mental health journey concerning mm-hmm. some things while you were single. And I was wondering if you mind sharing that with my audience, because it was such a good perspective on how we need to take care of our mental health.
Absolutely. Not a problem. I'm very transparent about my mental health journey, because I've just come to this place in my life where if anything that I've been through can affect or help anybody, then, I'm game for it. So Throughout my life, I had battled depression and anxiety, but early on, I didn't know that's what it was because, you know, a lot of times in our community, we don't talk about we don't identify it as depression. We don't identify it as something that you need to go to a therapist for. You know, it's just like, oh, either just pray about it or, you know, oh, that's crazy, uncle, you know, whatever. Like, we haven't in the past been good about embracing and identifying issues of surrounding mental health. And so, like I said, growing up, I had various things that I had been through. And what I've been doing all those years is just stuffing all of that stuff. And it all came to a head when I was at work one day. And this was only like about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And had a complete and total meltdown. Did not know what was going on because, you know, I was always the strong one. You know, I was the one. I had to make sure my boys had what they needed. At work, I was a supervisor, you know, so just always going. People are dependent on me. I don't have time to be sad, quote unquote. I don't have time to feel bad. I don't have time to be sick. And I just pushed myself until finally I found myself going to the doctor. And she was like, I want you to go over here to this address and, you know, let me know when you made it. So I get there and girl, I was so out of it that I hadn't noticed that they had taken my purse. I hadn't noticed that they had like the little door behind me was locked. I hadn't noticed that I had walked through a metal detector. Like I hadn't noticed any of that. And so I'm sitting there and I'm talking to the nurse and she's doing the whole triage thing, asking me questions. And finally, it just kind of hit me because the question she was asking me just didn't make sense, you know, for a regular doctor. And so finally, I looked at her and I said, ma'am, is this a regular, you know, hospital? And she kind of giggled a little bit. And she said, no, baby, this is a, you know, mental health institution. And that in that moment was when I realized I had a problem. And my problem, and the problem wasn't the mental health. The problem was the fact that my life was so strained because I was trying to do all the things and be all the stuff for all the people. And I was killing myself in the process, like literally killing myself. And so I spent 6 days there. And as I often tell people, the best 6 days of my life, not because it was fun, but because it literally turned my whole life around. And it showed me that it's okay to be vulnerable. It showed me that it's okay to not get everything done. That it's okay that, you know, my children weren't quote unquote perfect. Like all of that was okay. It's okay that I'm not the general manager of the universe.
And this is all stuff that sometimes it takes like the going to the deepest low for us mm-hmm. to like realize that who are we holding this together for? Like yep. One of my favorite sayings is like head down, eyes on your own test. Like who are you? Who is your competition? What are you trying to do? Who are you trying to beat? Who are you trying to be a better mother than? Who are you trying to be a better general manager than? I mean, what is it that makes us feel like we can't be vulnerable or transparent or say that we need help or a break? There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that. And I just think as Black women and as Black people that we have been placed into a box where we think that it's not okay for us to ever get tired. Like nobody can work 24 hours a day. Nobody can be on 7 days a week and expect to be okay yeah. and be able to function. So
yeah, we internalize a lot of things.
Yeah, I'm happy you took that time and you saw that, yeah, this is what I need right now. Even mm-hmm. though probably at that time you didn't have a choice whether you were going to be able to
right.
But realizing it or trying to recognize it as something that was a positive mm-hmm. instead of something that's negative. And that's how I think that so many of us have looked at mental health in the past, I think that we're getting better. And I still think that we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And I think largely if we can get out of each other's business, then some people can get well and get whole and get healed. Mm-hmm. But because we spend so much time trying to tell people what they should and shouldn't be doing and how they should be doing it. And, you know, if somebody has a moment, because we all have moments, and they take the time or they're courageous enough to be vulnerable, then you have people that want to tell them, oh, well, you'll be all right, or get over it. And, you know, and that makes people shut down, and they don't want to take that opportunity again, because it's like, oh, they're not going to believe me, or they're not going to listen to me, or nobody wants to hear what I have to say. And that is the most dangerous place for a person to be. I know y'all have heard that quote where they say, you know, check on your strong friends. That is so true. That is so true, because we are over here, we make it look easy, but people aren't there, you know, in that midnight hour when you know, your pillow is wet from the tears, because you don't really feel like you can talk to anybody because you're the strong one.
Right. Yeah. And just being held to that standard over and over and over again, it does something to you. It does start to break you down. So I am on this whole tip of Jesus and therapy. Like, mm-hmm. I need both, you know, there's no one or the other. And it comes to in places like women all across the board, you know, every nationality of women feels like they have to be the ones who do it all. Why mm-hmm. do we feel like we have to be the ones that do it all? There is so much help out here. There are so many different opportunities for us to get help, for us to call on other people, to allow people in, and we don't use them. I just had a situation this week where I said that I realize how transparent I am, because I don't mind telling anybody something, but I'm not vulnerable. Like, I don't allow people to help me. So I do all this stuff, and then I'm all upset because nobody helped me, but I never told anybody I needed help. So how are they supposed to know, you know? And then you hold it against somebody else. We can't do that, you know? So I'm learning.
Yes. And it's a journey. It's not something that, you know, comes overnight. And I still, you know, to a certain degree, struggle with asking for help. My friends and my family, they know if I ask for some help, that means I really need it. Like, it's not a frivolous, you know, thing for me. But I will fuss at other people about asking for help.
That's you know? How we are, right? It's like, we can see everything that everybody else should do for themselves to take care of themselves. But when it comes to us, we don't see what we need to do to take care of ourselves. Or we won't allow ourselves to give ourselves that grace. So it's been a really hard journey for me. I have been like a person that needed things to be perfect or needed things to be a certain way. And I just have to really let a lot of that go, because we can be perfect and then I can be in a mental institute for the rest of our life. I mean, it's like you can have one or the other. What do you want to do? You know, if you want the dishes done and someone hasn't done them the way that you wanted them to be done, but they're still in the dishwasher, let it go. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You know? So learning all of those small things for me has been hard. And I know that it's hard for a lot of women in general. So I'm just always preaching grace to my friends. So I have to practice it myself as well.
Yeah, release the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. And I don't think that most people identify it as guilt. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, oh, this is my responsibility, or whatever other verbiage they use around it. But think about when you have said, this is something that I'm going to do, and then you don't do it, and then how bad you feel. That's guilt.
Yep.
You know, that's guilt where, oh, I said I was going to take the kids to the park, but I've been working all day and I'm tired. And so then you don't take them and you're feeling guilty. But you have to, and you use the term giving yourself some grace. Same thing, release the guilt, give yourself some grace, because everything is not going to go the way that you planned it all the time. And that is something that relieves so much stress for me. Mm-hmm. Once I realized that, because I am, when I say I'm planner extraordinaire, like I plan everything. And so to be placed in a situation where literally it didn't matter what I had planned for the next 6 days. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to figure out who was going to get my kids and how, you know, think. And here's how crazy I am. I'm sitting here thinking, oh, I got this, you know, project at work that I'm working on, and I was helping with this thing at church. And I'm thinking about, still thinking about what I have to do.
Right.
And I'm literally behind lock and key. That's a problem.
Right, because you're not about to go nowhere. So
nowhere.
What you think about the thing that you had to figure out was your kid situation, and that was it. Like work projects, church projects. I told so-and-so down the street that we was going to have tea tomorrow. Look,
Yep. That's
all out the window, you know.
Yep.
And so we talked a little bit about quarantine before we got on here. And quarantine has been negative and positive for me. And I say positive in the way that I am sort of an introvert. And I do need that time to recharge. So it's just been so nice to not have commitments to things.
Yes. Like,
I can't go nowhere. So yeah, we can draw on the sidewalk all day long, you know, really being able to give into my kids in that way, because there's nothing else for me to do, nowhere else for me to go. And so I think that if people could concentrate on it in that way, instead of just being like, I can't wait to get out of this house. Like, there are some things that we can do to work on ourselves, to work on our relationship with our family members. I have said this several times to several different people, to be the hero in your own home, because a lot of times we want to run out to these jobs and do everything they want us to do and more, you know, come early, stay late, run to our friends' events and do all this different stuff, and then tell our kids to get out our faces because we're tired now. You know,
And I was guilty of that.
Yeah.
You know, early on, I really was, because I had not figured out how to balance it all. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that I grew up, it's like I couldn't figure out how to be the mom that was still able to give to my kids and, you know, do all of that, because I did not want my kids to grow up the way that I grew up. But also to be the success that I felt like I had to be. So it wasn't like a really that I wanted to be, but what I felt like I had to be. Because I think with some of us, depending on how we grew up, or, you know, the lies that we believed about ourselves because of how we grew up, we place ourselves in this bucket. Of, you know, these are the things that I have to do because I have to prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. Because I have to show them that I'm not, you know, like the person that they said that I was like, that I'm better than that, you know, neighborhood that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And so we stress and strain ourselves trying to prove stuff to people who probably not even watching.
Like, for people like, why is she spinning her wheels all day like that? Like, what
right.
are you doing? If they looked at you in that moment, they would say, wow, she's doing a lot over there.
Yeah. And
who then forgot, you know, what you did or what neighborhood you came from or whatever. Because right. guess what? They so focused on their own stuff. We want to think that somebody is so busy looking at what we're doing. But people are seriously, like, engaged in what they are doing. Mm-hmm. Especially during a time like this, like pandemic, I have seen that going around where, don't use this as a time to test my loyalty to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody out here trying to make it. So yeah. My focus is on what I have going on here. And it's not, I'm not looking outward at what other people are doing. So I think we do get caught up in a lot thinking that we have to prove something to somebody. And it's not true. People, for the most part, are not worried about what we're doing.
For the most part. And those who are worried about it, let them worry about it. They'll be okay.
Right. And those are probably the people that always have something to say about everything. So it don't matter what you're doing, you know, they're going to have something to say anyway.
Absolutely.
So, I wanted to shift gears a little bit because we were talking about quarantine and dating. So I wanted you to tell me a little bit about how that might be going.
Oh my goodness. So coming off of the book, so when I was called to write this book, because I'm telling y'all I was called to write it, it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to write, because with it came this mandate from God for me to be single. So like all the way, don't talk to nobody, don't. And so I'll tell y'all this real quick because it's kind of funny. So I was literally driving. God had given me, you know, the book and everything. So I'm driving. I'm having a whole conversation with God because I'm like, hey, you need to give me some rules because I work real well with rules. But if you don't give me rules, then I leave it up to my own interpretation, right? So I'm like, okay, so when you say single, what do you really mean? So, you know, we're chatting about that. And so I will never forget this moment. I was talking out loud and I said, well, what if somebody asked me to dinner or, you know, something like that? Mm-hmm. I heard clear as day, that's fine, but can you handle it? Mm. I said, well, I guess I won't be going to dinner. You know, so it was that kind of single season where no phone calls, no nothing. So here I come now, I'm coming out of single season into quarantine. So I'm like, Jesus, like, do you not want me to find my husband? Like, what are you trying to tell me? And so it's been interesting. I decided to get back on a dating site. Because normally, like, I'll get on them, I get bored, I get off, I don't respond to people, you know, it just sucks all the way around. But this time, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna actually engage. And I've actually met, I haven't met them in person, but have connected with several pretty cool people. So I don't know what that's supposed to look like because I'm not ready to go out in the world yet. I need some other people to go test it and come back and tell me how it was.
You ain't said nothing. Y'all go out there, look around, go to wherever y'all going and report back, okay? Right. Or don't report back because you don't make it. I don't know. But I'm not going to be the one. So, yeah. So, okay.
I don't know what quarantine dating, you know, is going to look like. I mean, I'd like to have a little quarantine boo, but, you know, we'll see.
You know, you still got to keep all that social distancing in mind. But I mean, this is also a good time maybe to use apps like that because people have more time to do things like that. You have more time to really get to know somebody that you may not have had before, you know, so.
And that's a very positive thing. I was actually talking to somebody about that earlier today, as a matter of fact, that it requires you, unless you're breaking the rules, it requires you to have conversation and focus on other things than, you know, being there with them in person. And I think it shows a lot about who people are and what's important to them, you know. And I don't know how long it's been since, you know, you've dated, but it's rough out here in these streets.
Girl, look, it ain't been that long. I remember. I've been married for 7 years, but I was single for 15. I had my son and I was a single mom for 15 years. And yeah, it wasn't easy then. So I don't even want to imagine what it would be like now. I met my husband on a dating site. So look, I'm keeping hope alive for you.
Go send those vibes on over here.
Yeah. Now, to me, you know, people would be like, ooh, that's not safe. That's not. And I'm like, it's safer than anything, though, because I have the chance to fill this person out over email. First of all, I get to see if you've got good grammar, you know, how to spell words.
Yes, that part.
And then second, I get to talk to you on the phone for as long as I feel comfortable.
Yes.
Until I say that I want to meet you. So that's better than meeting somebody out in the world, okay?
Yes, I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. And so, I don't know, it's just interesting even thinking about dating in general, dating as a mom, dating as a woman with standards in today's society. I was talking to someone about just the fact that some people just are actors, you know, they are not transparent, and that makes it tough. Because somebody said to me, well, you know, it's a woman's fault if, you know, she ends up, I think the conversation was about married men. Mm-hmm. And I said, no. You know, now some people, that's what they do. But for me, I don't think that we can, put it on that, because there are people out here who are really tricksters.
There really are. And more than a few. There are a lot of people out there that will not be honest with you about what they have going on. And I was always from the school of, you know, let me make the decision. You know, maybe I might be crazy enough to stay here while you got six wives. I mean, I don't know. But can I have the option to make that decision for myself instead of you taking that upon yourself to say that that's what I would want to deal with? You know, so thinking about all of that, I mean, like I said, 7 years ago, I wasn't feeling it. So I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be feeling it now, just because, like you said, being somebody that has standards. And I want to talk about that a little bit more too, because we live in a standardless society. So how do you navigate that, being a woman with standards and going out here and trying to meet people? And what is it that you tell them that you want them to know right off the bat about who you are and what you stand for?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, having standards, it's easy, but it's hard. It's easy from the perspective that I've been through so much and I've experienced so much. When you take that and combine it with my spiritual convictions, that makes my standards easy. But then it makes it hard, because you have people that almost try to make you feel guilty, because you're like, nah, you know, that's not my speed. Or, you know, just, you may even just be asking them just to be a little patient. And it's like they want, you know, all of this right now, or like you have some kind of obligation to them. Mm-hmm. And have nerve enough to try to quote the word about, you know, about submission. I'm like, no. I know what the word says, and the word says wives submit to your own husband. Mm-hmm. I am not your wife. You are not my husband. Therefore, there is no submission here.
Right.
But beyond that, just it's tough. It's tough because, unfortunately, some of what we have shown men is that we'll give in. You know, we've shown them that I might say this, but, you know, if you massage me a little, then I'll change my mind. Right. And so when they meet someone like me that has standards and sticks to them, then it's, oh, I'm difficult. You know, I'm a B word. I'm, you know, all of these things. And it's like, no, I told you from the beginning who I was, what I was, what I wasn't. Mm-hmm. You were the one who chose to try to think you could change me.
Right.
So that's not on me. Mm-hmm. And so you ask, what are some of the things I want them to know at the beginning when I talk to them? One, I want them to know, like, I'm saved for real. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about God. I might bust out in a spontaneous prayer, you know, like it is such a part of who I am, which is interesting because I wasn't raised in church. You know, I wasn't this lifelong church girl, but God is just such a big part of my life that if you can't deal with that, I'm not the one for you. I also want them to know that I'm really a genuine person. Like, what you see is what you get. How you see me at work is how you're going to see me at church, is how you see me at home. Some of my words might be a little different, but I am who I am. And I think people in society right now, especially those of us who are dating, are so used to people not being genuine. Right. And that they come to the table with that representative. And I'm like, I don't have a representative. Mm-hmm. This is me. The only differences you might see is who, like how I am when I get mad or how I am maybe when I'm sad. Right. But still at the core of me, I am who I am.
And I know that everybody comes trying to put their best foot forward, but in that you still need to be honest about who you are.
Yes.
And you find so often that that's just not a part of the dating or shoot, dang near even the married scene sometimes, you know, just about being honest about what you've done or who you are, or, you know, I presented myself to be this way, but I'm not really that person. You know, like I said, give the other person the option to decide if that's what they really want to deal with, because it's not for you to say that that's what they want. You know, I have a funny story about when I was on one of the dating apps. I had met this guy, and then I don't know, probably like several, even years later, I met my husband. And when we got married and everything, one of his friends saw our picture and said, I know her. So this was the guy. He knew this guy.
Okay.
He knew me. He recognized me. And he said, oh, no, she was too much. She had too many rules. She had too many whatever, whatever, whatever. I'm like, okay, that's a good thing. Okay.
Yes.
But that was his story. Like, no, I wouldn't have been able to deal with her. She wanted too much. She had too many standards or rules or whatever. And I'm like, that's what you're supposed to have for yourself.
Yeah, and that just means that you're not the one for me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You
know? That's all that means for me. And it doesn't hurt my feelings. It doesn't make me, you know, upset. It's just like, okay, well, I'm not your cup of tea. And that is okay.
Right.
It's okay. You don't have to lie. You don't have to do all of that. Just
move on. And it also let my husband know, to a certain degree, I mean, he already knew this, that I wasn't out there like that. Like, this is what I expect from people. And if this is what if they can't deliver this to me in a dating relationship, that's okay. Yep. Like you said, I'm not mad. We don't have to end this on a bad note. This isn't we don't have no problems. I'm just not the person for you. And that's okay. We both can move on from here.
Yep.
So tell me what you think it means. What is your definition of being a successful single?
Okay, so being successfully single to me is different from just being, I guess, regular single. Mm-hmm. So to me, what regular single looks like is I may not be in a quote-unquote relationship where I have a title. I'm not anybody's boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, whatever. But I can be single and still be involved in situationships, or I can be single and still be kind of dating, you know, here or there. So for me, what successfully single looks like is you have taken the time to kind of separate yourself, work on yourself, figure out what your ticks are, figuring out what your triggers are, figuring out, you know, those areas where you need to build that muscle, and getting to a place where you love you, you are able to really look internally and say, I'm good. Mm-hmm. So being successfully single requires doing the work. Like, successfully single is not something that just happens overnight.
Right.
But therein lies, again, the problem. Most people don't slow down long enough to say, okay, let me do a body scan and let me figure out where I need growth. And one of the ways that I always say, this is how you know this is an area, how do you respond to people when they say certain things? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you respond when maybe you want somebody to say something and they don't? How do you respond when you see certain things, you know, and maybe it triggers you? You know, all of those things are things that you maybe need to say, I might need some work in that area.
Yeah. And yeah. What you're saying about slowing down is so important. You know, this is not a race to get to the next thing. This mm-hmm. is about being in a relationship that didn't work out and then doing the evaluation on what you think that person played in it and then what you played in it. Because it's easy for us to say that we didn't have any part in it. Mm-hmm. Even if it was something that the person did, like cheated or whatever, still in that you played some role in it yourself to where you can go into your next relationship better because you took the time to slow down and figure out what it is that you wanted for your life or what you needed to change about yourself. Like I said, I was single for 15 years, and the last person that I dated before I met my husband, I said, I will not go and date another person until I figure out what the problem is.
Yeah,
because it is a problem, you know? So I need to just not even, like you said, no dinners, no conversations, because a lot of times you're just doing stuff to keep yourself busy. People are placeholders. Yep. So you're holding up other people's time. You're going to let them be a placeholder because you don't have nothing to do. So I said, nope, I'm not going to even entertain any of that. I'm just going to work on myself, do what I need to do, because the next person that I date is going to be somebody in the caliber of what I consider somebody that I want to be married to.
Exactly.
You're going exactly. playing all these games with people and with yourself, not being honest about what you need. And then it just leads to a lot of, to me, heartbreak and sadness that you could have really avoided.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of it comes from, you know, people are searching mm-hmm. for things, whether it's because of things that they lacked in childhood, whether it was, you know, hurt from relationships, feelings of rejection and abandonment. And I was guilty of it. You know, I was guilty of it. While I may not have been, you know, just out there bad or whatever, I definitely can recognize that I was looking for love in some places that I didn't need to be looking for it, but I didn't know any better. You know, I didn't have people there to teach me what healthy relationships look like. I didn't have anyone there to, you know, kind of say, you know, come on back. that's not it. And that's why I find it so important now for me to be that for a lot of young women, because I didn't have that growing up. Like, the women in my life were just so busy trying to just survive that, you know, this whole self-care, mental health, you know, consider the spirits, you know, that you interacted with these people. We didn't have those kind of conversations.
This is all new, you know, and I think that our mothers and our grandmothers, if they would have known this, they would have taught it to us, of course. You know, nothing against them. They did the best that they could at the what they had. That's all they had. And you will find, like, a lot of women from, like, our grandmother's age, because we're around the same age, they stayed married a long time, but what did they put up with? I mean, I know so many people who stayed married, but it was like there were so many affairs or there was so much separation, and they... It's like, yeah, they stayed married because that's what people did back then. People stayed married, not because they wanted to, because they didn't feel like they had another option, but to stay married. And that's not healthy. You know, there would even be times where my mom would say, you know, my grandmother had 5 kids, and she would come right home from work, and she wouldn't even take her shoes off. She wouldn't go to the bathroom. She'd just start cooking. And I say, who is that healthy for? Like, she didn't go to the bathroom? That state of the mentality that people had about the way that they took care of themselves back then was null and void.
Yeah.
Women didn't take care of themselves. So we're living in a different generation, a different time about how we even look at ourselves. So we can't expect any of the things that people took, you know, when our grandmothers were married, for that to carry over into who we are today.
Well, it got passed down like a badge of honor. You know, that whole superwoman thing, it's like a badge of honor. You know, I can do this and this and I can have it all. And, you know, and nobody's saying that you can't. We're just saying take care of yourself in the process.
Right.
You know, learn how to just take a moment to unravel all of those things that are, you know, intertwined in your head, and then keep going. You can still be the boss. You can still be super mom. You can still, you know, the great wife. You can be all of those things. But if you don't take the time to take care of yourself, then you will not be able to be any of those things for anybody.
It's very true. It's true. And I often look at like people from the era of like my grandmother, and I don't know how they made it. Like, really, I don't know how they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps over and over again without any of the things that we have now, any of the therapy, any of the self-care, any of the really like understanding that God has put you in a position to take care of people. But that doesn't mean that you don't look at what you need as well. I mean, they didn't understand those things. So I'm confused. I don't know how they made it.
Well, I mean, if that's all you know,
right?
And you know, that's what you do. It, yeah. Especially, I mean, that makes me think about, like, you know, when we read or hear or watch things about slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all these things. We say all this stuff that we would do. If I was him, I would have. No, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't want to say. The dogs would have been chasing you too. They would have turned the water hose on you too. We all would have been doing the same thing. You're right. Because we haven't seen anything else, right?
Exactly. So, you know, they just did what they knew. The expectations were given to them from generations of, you're the woman. This is what you do. This is what you're going to handle. You're supposed to take care of your man, take care of these kids, make sure they're fed, house is clean, you know, all of this stuff. And so it's like, if they didn't do that, they were made to feel like less than a woman.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. It is. So how do you think that you being married and divorced makes you look at what you want to see in a marriage in the future? How has that affected how you look at marriage?
It actually has given me a very positive outlook on marriage. Because I can clearly see now where I could have done things differently. And I'm not going to say I know what he could have done differently, but I also can see now why he did some of the things that he did. Mm-hmm. Not making excuses for it, but I can see why. Mm-hmm. Logically. It still didn't make sense to me emotionally, but logically I can understand some things. And so what that does for me when I consider, you know, potentially going into marriage again, is it's going to require me to be open. It's going to require me to be observant. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, especially when you're dealing with some men, they're not going to say a lot of the things that need to be said. So some of it is, you know, observation, discernment. You know, I was not spiritually then who I am now. Mm-hmm. And so I know that that's going to play a huge role in my next marriage, because that wasn't, yes, I went to church and things like that, but I was not spiritually mature. Mm-hmm. When I was married the first time. It honestly makes me excited, because I'm like, if I could do even that at that age and I didn't have the tools that I have now, oh my goodness, I have to believe that my next marriage is going to be amazing.
That's awesome. And I, like we said at the beginning of the podcast, if you do the work, then you set yourself up for such an amazing experience, because you already know the things that didn't work for you in a marriage. Yeah. And not to say that every person is the same, you know, you meet somebody else, it's going to be different experiences, but you do have the groundwork to work with. You already know what's not going to fly. And so I think that just helps out tremendously, as well as, just like the age factor. You know, people is always talking about age ain't nothing but a number or whatever, but I'm sorry, the older you get, the wiser you become. I didn't get married until I was, or you should, exactly. I didn't get married till I was 37. Everybody around me was getting married. I wanted to get married so bad. Girl, I wouldn't have been no good, okay? I would have been married and divorced. I mean, there were so many things that I needed to work on that I'm actually happy that I didn't get married until later in life, because it caused me to be in a position where, yeah, I might have a fighting chance to stay married to the same person because I did a lot of the stuff that I wanted to do. He did a lot of stuff that he wanted to do before he was married. And now, this is the most important thing to us. So that kind of puts you in a path of saying, okay, you know, we might be able to work this thing out. So,
yeah. And once you get, like we said, once you get to a certain age, hopefully you've matured in all the areas emotionally and all of those things. But I'll tell you, like I said, it's rough in these streets. You know, the fact that we have people our age that are still talking about their, you know, oh, you know, I started falling for you and I got scared. Grow up. Grow up, Mr. 40-something.
Don't be coming back around here expecting me to push you in your wheelchair, okay? I mean,
right. I'm not.
Get in on this right now.
Yeah, so like let's grow up in all the areas, you know. Let's stop playing these emotionally manipulative games. Let's stop with the, you know, this. It's almost like a law of numbers where it's like, okay, I'm a date, you know, I'm gonna do all of this and one of them's gotta work out, you know. No, be intentional.
Right.
Be exactly. intentional about what it is that you want, and then be transparent and open with people. As we've said several times, give them the choice.
Because you know, people don't want to be out here dating you while you're dating other people, and that is their prerogative.
They right.
So in all of that too, I have to get back to your sons. Tell us how old they are.
They're 20 and the youngest will be 18 tomorrow.
Wow. Tell them we say happy birthday. 18. That's a big one.
Yeah.
But so how has co-parenting worked out for you?
I have a great testimony of, you know, co-parenting, but at the beginning, y'all, it was rough. It was so rough. I think that we were figuring out that we weren't each other's enemies mm-hmm. at the beginning. Like I knew I wasn't his enemy, but I don't think he knew that I wasn't his enemy. Mm-hmm. And so anything that I would say, you know, it was a fight. Like he felt like there was these ulterior motives. I'm like, no, all I want is for you to help me take care of these kids that you helped make.
Right.
You know? So again, it was very rocky, at the beginning, and he was dating someone and she's the same person. So remember, I've been divorced 15 years. So same person for the past 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I thank God for her. You know, and most people don't have that testimony. I truly thank God for her. We get along just fine. We text each other jokes, you know, like we're good. And because we were able to be good, it actually improved the relationship with my ex-husband and I, mm-hmm. because I would sometimes be able to talk to her about what I needed, or hey, remind him that he's supposed to do this, you know, with the boys, or you know, that kind of thing. So now, honestly, if you were to see like the three of us together, you wouldn't even know that was my ex-husband. You just think that was one of my friends. And I love it. I mean, he's still getting on my nerves, but but I think once he realized that you know, that like I said, I wasn't his enemy, that we could do this thing together, we've been great.
That's good. I love to hear stories like that. I have another friend who has the same situation, and they just, I mean, I love to see them together. Her ex-husband has moved on. He's remarried. He has children with his new wife, and mm-hmm. they all be swimming in the swimming pool together, the whole family. I said, well, I love it, because this is exactly how it should be. We brought people into this world together. There's no reason for us not to be able to get along. And you see it time and time again, like there has to be a problem. There has to be a situation. We're not supposed to like each other. Why? Why aren't we supposed to like each other? He and I liked each other a lot at one point, enough to get married, to have kids together, you know, whatever we did. So, you know, it don't have to turn all the way around like that. And I just say, you know, if you met somebody that fuels your fire and you could make it work with them, I'm excited for you. Because God has that for me as well. So I'm not mad. As long as you treat my kids good, we good. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So I'm happy that you guys could find that.
Yeah. And some people don't understand it. You know, they're like, they will literally say, that's weird. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it came from me establishing at the beginning, because I was thinking forward. So I'm like, because I wasn't in a relationship, but he was. And so I made a decision that I was going to treat him and his significant other and their relationship the way that I would want him to treat mine whenever I got into one. So if I'm going to expect respect, then I've got to give respect. If I'm going to expect consideration, then I've got to give consideration. And so I'll be honest in saying I'm pretty sure I set the tone for, you know, what this was going to look like. And so when I finally did get into, you know, a relationship later on, that foundation was laid. Like, we're not about to act a fool with each other. We're not going to be disrespectful to each other. You know, this was around the time when the kids were still playing like YMCA soccer, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, we're all there together. Y'all talk to each other like men. We're going to talk to each other like women. And my ex-husband's thing was, he's still protective of me. Like, you know, long as you don't disrespect her, put your hands on her, or do anything to my kids, we're cool. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's the way to be. I mean, you know, we all have to be each other's keeper. I'm such a person of community. And that's a community. We decide to get married. We don't work out, or we decide to have kids together. We don't work out. We're still a community. And our main goal is to raise these kids, and we need to figure out how to do that successfully. So, like I said, I love to hear it.
And I also wanted to provide an environment where my children could see a healthy relationship between my, you know, their dad and I. Because I think the worst thing we could have done is stayed in the marriage. I think they would have seen a lot of dysfunction had we done that. And so it was important to me for them to see something healthy on the other side of that. Like, okay, we made this decision. Being together wasn't, you know, the best thing for us, but that doesn't mean we have to be enemies. And I also wanted them to know, because they have a little sister from that relationship, I never want their little sister to feel like she's not welcome here. Or for them to feel like they can't be big brothers to her because of my rules or my restrictions or whatever. You know, if she ever needed to come here for any reason, she's more than welcome.
Mm-hmm. And that's healthy. And I just pray for us all to be able to get to a place like that. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes there were bigger things that happened that may not allow you to get along with the person. But I think for the most part that, you know, sometimes we just want to stay mad, you know, and it's like, no, you can get over that hump and get over that hill. Sometimes people do things to us that we don't like, or that we would have preferred them to not do to us, but it is what it is, you know. And if our main goal is to keep our kids at the forefront of this and have them see us be able to co-parent together, that we both love them, that we both care about them, that they are both of our highest goals, then I feel like make it happen. You know, put yourself aside for a second and say that, you know, this is for the greater good for our family. So
we have to choose not to walk in a spirit of offense. Mm-hmm. It's a choice.
That's good.
And I'm not saying that sometimes people don't do things that should offend us, but we get to choose whether we are going to allow that to offend us or not. And that's not saying be a, you know, be a doormat,
right?
But you can control how you react, what you say, what you don't say. And I made a choice not to be offended, not to walk in that spirit of offense.
That's really good. I like that you say that, because we do sometimes just want to stay stuck there. And, you know, you could have offended me. You could have done something. When me and my ex broke up, he was living here in California, and he just decided that this isn't what he wanted to do. And of course, at the beginning, I wasn't happy. Nobody is happy to hear that that's not what the other person wants to do, or this is not, it's not turning out how you thought it was going to turn out. But if I was to hold on to that for years and years and years, then I am not allowing my son to have the relationship with his father that he deserves.
Right.
And so it's not okay, you know. And then at some point, he might come back to me and say, why did I hold him from his father? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I put myself in a position that I didn't have to be in. So yes, I was offended. Yes, I was hurt. Yes, I was upset. I was all those things. But to relive that over and over and over and keep myself in that place for what? It's not benefiting anybody. It's not going to change anything, you know? So I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, you just got to let yourself out of that place of bondage. I used the analogy the other day. It's like you're in jail and the jailer has opened the door, but you're still sitting in the jail. Why? The door is open. Walk out. But some of us are so accustomed to the bondage that when we are set free, we don't know what to do. We don't know how to, you know, exit the door and go out and be free. We would rather sit there because that's what's normal to us. Right. And I mean, we can circle that all the way back to the book. You know, this is what the book is about, is the door is open. Are you going to walk through it? You know, are you going to choose that I'm going to be a healthy, whole, healed person so that when I walk into this next situation, it's not even all about walking into the next situation. That's part of it. But just for you, like, do you want to be healed? Do you want to be whole for yourself? Because
right.
Let me tell you, it feels so much better on the other side of that door.
It does.
I was in that jail cell for a long time with the door wide open, but could not put one foot in front of the other for whatever reason.
And so that is good. It's good to be able to get to the other side, like you said, just for yourself. This isn't about like attracting the next person. This is just about me appearing attractive to my own self.
Yes.
Because that's what I desire. So speaking of the book, I would like for you to tell people where they can find you, where they can find the book, and all that good stuff before we wrap up today.
Awesome. So you can find me on Facebook, The Purpose Promoter. You can also find me on Instagram at The Purpose Promoter. But I also have another Instagram page, which is about leadership. So that one is at Dr. Masadi Porter. You can find the book on Amazon. If you just go on Amazon and put in Alone, Not Lonely, or if you put in my name, then it will pop up. Also, I have a website, and on my website, I have my previous book, as well as some shirts and things like that. You can also read my blog that I write. And so that is www.thepurposepromoter.com.
And I will make sure that I link all of that stuff in the show notes. Masadi, it has been so wonderful talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming on and gracing my audience. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really did. I really enjoyed it. It's like talking to an old friend.
That's what it's all about around here, girl. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of the Melanated Mom Podcast. Let's stay connected. Read my blogs over at melanatedmom.com. Stay connected with me on Facebook at melanated-mom, on IG at Melanated Mom Podcast and my new Twitter account at Melanated Mom 1. Talk to you soon.